Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig Garber. When I'm not interviewing world-class guitar players, I'm busy helping clients with their marketing. In fact, since March of 2000, I've helped over 300 clients in 108 different industries all over the world sell everything from $20 books to $5,000 seminar seats and everything in between. I even authored a marketing book called How to Make Maximum Money with Minimum Customers. And now, I'm giving away a free marketing strategy session to business owners who qualify. On this call, we'll discuss what's currently working in your business, specific sales and marketing problems you're struggling with, and I'll identify specific strategies you can use to overcome these problems and increase your cash flow. To find out if you qualify and to book your free marketing strategy session with me, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing right now. Again, to book your free marketing strategy session with me, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing right now. Thanks for listening. Now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber with Everyone Loves Guitar, and we have a really interesting guest today and a great player. We're with Jake Ezra Schwartz. Jake's the guitarist for the Book of Mormon on Broadway, the 2011 Tony Award and Grammy Award winning Best Musical. He's also subbed for about 15 other lead guitar spots, including Jersey Boys, Lion King, and Wicked the Musical, all on Broadway. He's also performed with Alex Skolnick, who we had here on the show a few episodes ago, Stevie Wonder, Dave Fuschinski, Alan Menken, Jared Spector, Laura Bell Bundy, and Papa Denny Daugherty. Additionally, he originated the guitar and mandolin chair on the 2009 Broadway show 9 to 5, working and recording with Dolly Parton. One of his lifelong dreams is to meet his ultimate guitar hero, Eddie Van Halen, who, after attending Mormon, graciously signed Jake's guitar, writing, "Got crazy VH Van Halen style, Jake," which was pretty cool. Recently, Jake was featured in the premier issue of Unbuilt magazine, as well as Premier Guitar magazine. And later this year, his signature guitar, the Jake, will be commercially available at somatone.com. That's S-O-M-M-A-T-O-N-E. Jake, thanks a lot for coming on the show, man. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. So super cool.
Thanks, man. So how'd you get your first gig playing on Broadway? I think that's a big question everybody would want to know.
That's a great question. Like a lot of players, most players who start on Broadway start as a sub. Now, how do you get into subbing? That's a whole nother question. I was very lucky because my dad is a musician and did a lot of touring and session work back when there was more of that kind of work. And one of his closest friends is Bob Rose, who you may not know his name, but he's a very, very heavy Broadway and session player. He's played on tons of records, Monkees and Frankie Valli and Heavy Cat, wonderful player, very nice guy. And he was doing Footloose. This is, I guess, 1999. And I think I was still in college, or I was finishing up college at that point. No, I was already out of college. Now, what am I talking about? My dad said, can Jake sub for you? And Bob was like, you know, I think being, you know, my dad, he gave me a shot, but he wasn't thrilled about it because, you know, when you sub out, you're putting your job on the line. So you have to really go out there and do a good job. Luckily, Footloose was a show, the music I was very, very familiar with. And I, had the soundtrack, and it was something I was really comfortable with, a rock rhythm book. And I was subbing for Bob, and it was another guitar player, John Benthal. So it was a two-guitar book, and Bob was mostly rhythm playing, and John did a lot of the leads. I had some lead parts too, but John kind of did a lot of the heavy lifting. I was more kind of holding down the fort. And it was fun, and it was a great experience, and I got the sub there for a while. And through that, John Benthal, we got to play together. He kind of helped me and recommended me to other players to sub on other shows. Footloose closed. I don't know how long it lasted, maybe a year or two. And he recommended me to somebody named Kevin Kuhn, who was playing a Lion King at the time. And Kevin brought me in and I played, and that worked out great. And that led to other shows. And I think at my peak, I was subbing on 6 shows at once, which was crazy, but a lot of fun. And I actually was averaging about 4 shows a week playing, which was amazing. I mean, I was pretty much making a living just subbing at that point. Although I do have to say, at that time, I was playing for, you know, subbing for players that were taking off a lot. They were doing a lot of other gigs. Scott Cuny, who was playing at Spamalot, I would sub for him. He plays for the Opera, and Kevin too. And they do a bunch of other gigs and work with other players. They were taking off all the time. So I had, between the two of them, it was almost more work than I could handle. And it was a really great thing, because I got to play the shows a lot. And as a sub, if you get to play the show more, you're going to sound better. You know, if you only play once a month, it's hard, especially if the show is challenging. So I was lucky with that. And that's kind of how I got started. And I was also, you know, when I started, when I got married, Janine really helped me along the way, because she really knows a lot more about Broadway and coached me on which shows to sub on and whatnot. Like, I got called for shows that weren't sure how long it was going to last on Broadway. Is it worth it learning a show and subbing on a couple of times then it closes? And that's happened to me. I subbed on a show. I played the show one time on the closing night.
Oh my God.
And the composer was there too, to add, you know, to make it even more nerve wracking. It was an off Broadway thing for John Benthal, actually. But in Broadway, it's really word of mouth. And you know, if you do a good job, you're going to do more work. And it's a really cool thing. But that's the most powerful thing, I think, is doing a good job and being cool. And if people like you, then you're going to get called for more of that kind of work.
So Broadway is just like a microcosm of, because that's how it is in non-Broadway circles as well. It's like you did a good job and this guy recommends you and his buddy needs a player. And you say, oh, you know, call Jay because he did this. So it's just its own little microcosm of the rest of the musical world functioning pretty similarly.
Absolutely.
That's really cool. Where'd you go to school?
I went to William Patterson in Wayne, New Jersey, and I was a classical guitar major, and I also did education, music education. I was performance, I think, for the first semester, and it just seemed like kind of a waste. My roommate was an education major. He said, look, dude, you can do education, still have all the performance, get the performance credits, get lessons and everything, but you have the education on the side, too, just as a fallback. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? You know, I had taught when I was in high school. Private guitar lesson, but I enjoyed teaching. And so when I graduated, I immediately went to teaching, actually. I went and got a middle school job, and I've taught for about 3.5 years in a couple of different districts. So, yeah.
In the city?
Excuse me?
In the city?
No, actually in Jersey. I grew up in Jersey.
Okay.
I was born in upstate New York, but I moved to Jersey when I was about 8. Westfield, New Jersey, and my folks are still there. Wonderful town. And
Westfield Mall, right?
I don't think that's the same Westfield. That's a different brand. Westfield is like Central Jersey, near like Cranford and Garwood. You know, I don't know how well you know Jersey.
No, I don't know it too well.
it's a lovely town, and it was really. I really feel like when I moved there and I really got into guitar and everything, it would really kind of shape me into what I am now. And they had, you know, they had a I played in bands and with the performances, and it was really great. I'm glad I got to grow up there just have opportunities to play.
That's cool.
And perform too. Yeah.
I always appreciate when someone has that like really healthy attitude about where they grew up, you know, like you could tell you like positive, really enthusiastic memories about it that comes through. That's nice. Like
Thanks.
Growing up in the Bronx, you just don't, you're glad you grew up there sort of, but not for this like not to that healthy positivity per se. So I appreciate it when I see it in others.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah.
So what's different about playing in a show in a pit versus playing in a band on stage or doing session work?
That's a great question. In some ways, they're actually really similar. It's funny because, Broadway is a very specific sort of, you know, it's the way it's done. Although it's changed over the years, you know, I mean, it's I feel like a lot more modern shows that come about. The guitar part and the band parts are really, really interesting and challenging. But I think performing in a band, I think it's kind of like a Broadway show in some ways, because you have a set list and you have a flow to how it goes, and you have certain sounds and certain pedals, and you have a choreography to how things are put together. And then with session work, that's a different animal too, because you really have to play the right thing for what's going on. I guess that's kind of like Broadway too, but it's a little more specific, I think. But in some ways, after playing in Broadway, it's kind of like doing a session, because you're wearing headphones and you're making noise, but generally, you know, the music has, they want the music to have a very uniform sort of, you know, sound to it, like a session recording. So, you know, it's consistent every night, and the vocals sit well over it, and things like that. But I see a lot of similarities. I mean, I think it's a very, you know, it's maybe there's a little more variance with doing performing live, whereas Broadway is a little more consistent. But I'm actually really grateful in my show, because we're only 8 pieces, or 9 with the conductor. It's a small band, so and I'm the only guitar player. And it's kind of a rhythm rock and pop score mostly. I get to have some fun, and I can take some chances here and there too, and throw in some little things here and there. Not too much, obviously, but other shows, it's usually pretty strict about what you're playing on the page. But at Book of Mormon, they give me some leeway, which is a lot of fun.
That is cool. What's the toughest, you know, the biggest challenge about doing that?
A couple of things. The first thing I think is it's gonna sound funny, just getting there, just being able to get to the theater. Even though I'm very close, it can be a hassle and it can be a challenge. Getting down there, train gets stuck underground, or having closures or things like that. One of the things when we moved to this apartment that I love, that literally the train station's right outside the door. You walk out, the station's right there, 110, beautiful. It takes me 15 minutes to get to work. No complaints there. Yeah. However, they're just close to our station now, so now I have to walk down to 103. Not a big deal, but still, when I have gear and I have things,
and it's cold,
it changes the whole thing. I have a session tomorrow morning in Long Island City, so I'm probably end up just taking a car. I just have to deal with, walking all the way down with my guitar. It's gonna be rush hour in the morning, so things like that. But I say the commute can be a challenge. I got stuck on the ground once. I almost didn't make the show. I got stuck on the ground, and then we finally got to a station, still far away from the theater, like 10 minutes of the show. I run out. I grab a cab. The guy almost doesn't take me. He's like, I got to get to work. I don't know. Okay, come on. And he takes me. And there was still traffic coming down, and I had him drop me off 2 blocks before. And I ran in just they're giving the speech. The show is about to start.
Holy crap.
It's fine. It's, you know, shit happens. And I just don't play in the opening number. So it would have been, even the show had started, probably wouldn't have been disastrous. I don't come in until hello. There's an overture before, which I don't play on. There's no guitar on the overture. What else? I a lot of times when you play the same show over and over again, it can be a little monotonous, but I try to think about there's someone in the audience seeing the show for the very first time, and I want to be sure they get the real, honest, purest way the show is going to sound. And in Mormon, there's a lot of really fun guitar parts. There's a big shred solo in the second act, a Spooky Mormon Hell Dream, which is a lot of fun, kind of Paul Gilbert-y. And it's got a lot of really cool parts. So it keeps me interested. And 7 years in, it's still a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And,
it's great. But I think, you know, you feel a little tired, or it's like, you know, it's easy to fall into that funk. But I really try to not let that get the best of me. And it's, you know, it's not a long show. And
how long is it? How long is the show?
About 2.5 hours.
Well, that's a long time. No.
Well, I'm not playing all that time, but it's a good amount, or more like, you know, 2 and change, because we have a 15-minute intermission in there. So about the whole 2.5 hours, and I get to the show. It's a very concentrated 2.5 hours. No, it's it's fun, and I'm also really grateful because it's a really great band, and all the musicians are wonderful. Actually, everyone in the theater, you know, the stage managers and house managers and crew and the dressers and the hair people, they're all really cool, wonderful people who are happy to be there and take pride in their work. And it's a neat thing, you know. It's like, I don't know, 30 or something people all working together to put on a show, and it's a cool thing. It's a fun show, and people love it. And when we're done, I look up, you know, we're in the pit, so I can see the first couple of rows. I see people smiling, and they hang out at the bows. We're all soloing, and you know, having fun at the end, people hang out and clap, which usually I think means people just leave and they want to go to their next tourist destination.
Is it mostly tourists there at the show? Is it mostly tourists at the show?
Sometimes. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, theater people have probably seen the show already in New York City, but yeah, tourists or people out of town or from Europe or from wherever they come, or they've seen it in Australia. We had a bunch of Australian tourists come and see and love that they saw it in Australia. They love seeing it on Broadway. And yeah. And what's cool also is that because the show is written by Matt Stone and Trey Parker from South Park, reach a whole other audience that wouldn't necessarily want to see a Broadway show. You know, they come because I don't want to see a Broadway show, but Book of Mormon would have to be kind of fun because it's South Park and
yeah,
language. And but you know, truth be told, the show is actually very sweet, and it's very much in this tradition of old school musicals like The Music Man and King and I and things like that. There's that sort of vibe to it. With foul language and some pretty, but it's very funny. And they do it in such a clever way too. It's not like they immediately start. It kind of sneaks up on you. And, and the songs are well written and they're really fun. It's a cool gig.
It's funny. You just mentioned foul language. We were up, we just talked about, we were in the city last week and we're down in Washington Square Park. And my wife turns around and she goes, God, everybody in New York curses all the time, right? I said, yes. Because, you know, we've been together over 25 years, and she, like, in the beginning, she's like, God, you curse so bad. And I'm like, I'm not. I'm just talking. I'm not cursing. And she's been here a bunch of times, but it was really funny. She just, like, everybody around us is just, like, talking but cursing, you know? It was
they want to accentuate their point. You know? Yeah. Like, fuck New York City, dude.
Yeah, right. You know, she's like, wow, I never realized that. I'm like, yeah, of course. You know? I said, it's not just. What's that?
I was saying, well, I think one of the misconceptions that people think the New Yorkers are rude, and they're not. The New Yorkers are very nice. They're just in a rush. They just want to get there. But if something, you know, if someone needs help, people are going to help you. They're very nice. Yeah,
for sure.
Courteous, nice people, but it's just we're all in a hurry to get to their gig or to the job or to whatever. So
right.
Yeah, fair amount of cursing.
Yeah, I always say, man,
I'm kind of numb to it now, especially with this show.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it just doesn't even enter your radar screen, kind of, you know. But yeah, I think it's to your point. Yeah, we're New Yorkers are just busy; they don't have the time. But when, you know, I always say, there's no place like where else can you go where you could be standing on the line with somebody waiting for something. You can have a conversation for 20, 30 minutes about the Yankees, about anything, you know, and it's hard to do that with that sort of freedom in other places.
Oh, that's cool. You're right. Yeah, that's true. Florida's nice too. People in Florida are really nice. I'm always taken. My in-laws have a condo in Naples, and we head down there on weekend, and it's lovely. And it was so nice and so laid back, and just go out of the way to help. Even it's just like, and we're like, wow, because New Yorkers are very much like, you know,
right,
just want to get to their thing and do it as quickly as possible. So that's a nice change. But no cursing either. You're right. It's very it's a whole different. Sort of feel
and
vibe.
It is.
And it's always a shock when you come back to New York.
You work with Denny Daugherty, which was really cool. How did you wind up working with him, and what was that experience like?
And that was a really funny.
Tell everybody who he is too, for people who may not know.
Denny Daugherty was a lead singer of the Mamas and Papas. You know, they were a big band. They had a bunch of hits, including,
California Dreamin', Dream a Little Dream.
Well, that wasn't their song. That was a hit for Mama Cass. And it was a musical called Dream a Little Dream. And Denny was a star. And John Benthal had the guitar chair for that. And he ended up leaving to do Little Shop of Horrors. So I took over for him for that. And that was a lot of fun because I was on stage and in costume. And I had a bunch of guitars. I got to play Denny's. He had a 12-string Takamine that I played on California Dream, and it sounded great. Had that real
his actual guitar?
Yeah, not the one. I don't think he had that for the recording, but it was his instrument. Yeah,
that's cool.
And Denny's son played drums. John, he was great. And Denny was super cool, and it was like he kind of told the story. There was a bunch of projections in the back, and we did a little acting. I had to wear sunglasses in part of it and pretend to be tripping out on acid. There's a whole bunch of really fun. It was a really, really fun gig. And I shared the dressing room with Denny, so I got to hang and talk with him. And he passed away a while ago, but he was such a sweet guy and really open. And I was just geeking out the fact that he's hung out with the Beatles and the Birds. And, you know, I was really into, I'm actually really into the later stuff the Birds did with Clarence White and the B-Bender stuff. So I was asking about that, but he was more, I think he worked with them back when they were doing 8 Miles High and things like that and stuff. But that was a really fun, that was a really cool gig and really fun show. And I had a bunch of crazy doubles too. That was one of the craziest doubles. Like I had to play dobro, slide, banjo, mandolin, and harmonica, which is really, I never played harmonica. I mean, you know, breathe in and out, you know, Bob Dylan style. But I learned how to, there was a couple, we did, I forgot what the song was called, but it had a big harmonica part in it. And I learned how to bend notes. And, you know, I got by. I mean, I learned the parts for the show. If I had to play anything outside of that, probably not. But but for the show, you know, I made it sound good. I pretty much did what John Benthal did. And I remembered after we had finished up and we were packing up, and someone came up and said, "Man, you sound great. How long have you been playing harmonica?"
2 weeks.
2 weeks. I could just play that one part. And same with the banjo part, too. I'm not really a banjo player, but I find a way to make it work. And same with the mandolin, too. And that's what's fun about this business, too, when subbing, is that it kind of takes you out of your comfort zone. Like for Lion King, I had to play thumb piano, kalimba. So I bought a Paul Tracy kalimba, and you can tune little tines. I just practice the parts, and I grew up my thumbnail so I can plunk on it. I have a nail here for my classical, but not on this thumb, but I grew it out to play the show. And that was a lot of fun, but nerve-wracking. You know, the first time you sub is always super scary because everyone knows you're there, and they're listening, and you know, it's a lot of pressure. And what I've learned when you're subbing is that when you do it, you want to be sure you're totally comfortable in every aspect, not just the playing and the music, but also, like, you know, the chair is comfortable and where everything is, where the bathroom is, who, you know, who this person is, and just everything. There's no surprises. You sit down and it's just as comfortable as if you're sitting in your couch and playing. So when you feel that comfortable, you do a good job. And and of course, you know, if a mistake or two happens, that's fine. But if, as long as you get the overall arc of the show and you're able to pull it off, they're happy and they'll call you again, hopefully.
It sounds like you have pretty healthy, like realistic expectations about for yourself. I mean, it's some people have a hard time saying, "Oh, I can't make any mistakes." And I think that's probably not as healthy as like what you just said. Hey, if you make a mistake, you're fine. As long as you get the arc of the show, you know, it's unrealistic to expect a sub not to make a mistake.
Someone once said, it's impossible to think about playing a perfect show. I like that because it's like, I mean, you know, it's, you know, you play something enough times, it's going to be very comfortable, but you know, sometimes the simplest thing you're going to screw up. It just happens and we're human. And, but you know, but that's the beauty of having a live band because it breathes and it moves with what's going on. You know, there's a different actor on stage or a different sub or a standby on, they're going to say lines differently. It's going to feel different. You have to adjust to that and you know, with following the conductor and everything like that too. So it's you know, you have to be understanding of the conductor has to be understanding of that kind of thing. But yeah, as long as you get the, I think sometimes when you learn a book, like I think when people get my book, they immediately go to the Spooky Mormon Hell's Room solo because that's everyone talks about that. And yes, it's a challenge, but you know, there's more to it than just a solo. And I don't even think that's the hardest part in the show, in my opinion. I actually think a lot of the nylon strings or nylon parts are more challenging. Not to play, but because they're completely exposed. You just have like that in the keyboard and a little triangle. So it's like you can't be off.
Yeah.
And I found that to be a little more nerve-wracking. Even now, 7 years in, I still get a little nervous on that stuff. But it's good. You need a little bit of that stuff. It keeps you, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Keeps you checked in so you don't get too comfortable.
Totally, man. Away from the job, what kind of music do you personally like playing and listening to?
I like a lot of music. Even though I play guitar, I still listen to a lot of guitar music. I just saw the Dixie Dregs. Cool. They were so good, and I'm a fan of theirs, and it got me back into getting into their music, and I hung with Steve afterwards. He was so sweet. Man, Steve is like, I mean, you know, I've met him – a few times, and always gracious. And it was like, I told him, I showed him a picture when I met him back in 92 and he cracked up. I said, I work on Book of Mormon. And he looked at me and said, oh man, that's so cool. And he was so gracious and humble. I almost started crying because I was like, God, what a wonderful guy. Like sometimes when you tell people that, they go, oh, I've done Broadway. I mean, they want to, you know, but I didn't sense any of that. He was really sweet. And as I said goodbye, he said, congrats on the gig. I was like, wow, what a gentleman.
That's cool, and man.
Played his butt off.
Where'd you see them? Where'd they play?
Town Hall.
Oh, wow.
It was great. It was like, I bought, as soon as the tickets were released, I bought tickets. I bought four tickets, or three tickets for my band, the bass player and drummer. And it was really, really fun. And they sounded great. It was the original members, Andy West on bass and Rod Morgenstein. And after seeing that, I started listening to their music again. And it's so great. Not just the playing, but the compositions, I think, are really cool. Very clever, and he Steve really thinks like a classical musician with all the counterpart and how all the parts work together. And hearing Andy West play those parts was really great. I saw the Dregs earlier with Dave LaRue, also fabulous player, but different. And hearing Andy said, oh wow, that's a big part of the sound, because Andy's picking all that stuff and following Steve. And I met Andy afterwards, he was very sweet, and I said, you must be a guitar player, because yeah, because me and Steve kind of sync up our parts together, so it sounds uniform. And my cat's jumping on my lap here. So
there you go. I see a cat tail sticking up.
And I also love country bluegrass, and I love Albert Lee. Brad Paisley's awesome, and I love classical music. John Williams is amazing. I have a classical gig tonight, so when we're done, I'm going to shed and playing all this really cool. Some Antonio Soler, which is kind of like Scarlatti and Bach, very, very cool, tuneful sort of music. I got a cool piece we're doing by Couperin called La TikTok Shock, French. Very cool. I really love a band called The Bird and the Bee. I don't know if you've heard of them.
No, where are they? What are they like?
It's just a duo. It's Inara George and Greg Kirsten, I think his name is. He's a big producer. He's produced Adele and things like that. And Inara George is the daughter of Lowell George from Little Feet.
Oh, from Little Feet, yeah.
And I discovered her and them just because I was so into Little Feet and Dixie Chicken. I got really deep into that stuff, and I bought they made a compilation of people covering their music, and one of the tunes had Inara singing. It's just a cool voice, and I was just totally taken by her sound and her, and she kind of had that kind of quirky thing like her dad Lowell, although he passed away. I think she's only five when he passed away, which is sad. But so when I was researching her, and I found the band she had, The Bird and the Bee, and their songs are great and well produced, and her voice is awesome, and Greg is a wonderful producer and keyboard player, and just frames it. It just really shows you how great production really makes a record happen and make it exciting and interesting to listen to sonically. Plus it's great songs, and I always get their stuff. I'm a big fan. I've seen them, and I've seen Inara made a solo record too, and she played at New Blue, local place, about a month or two ago, and I got to meet her. She was super sweet, and I was just telling her I was a fan of hers, a fan of her dad's, and they're really good. They're worth checking out. Interest, not much guitar in there. Just some guitar, but it's mostly keyboards.
Bird and the Bee.
Really, really well done.
Funny, you have a very atypical city taste. You have, you know, like you're into a lot of bluegrass, country picking, that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's not like the usual urban urban music that people get into. That's pretty cool. How'd you get turned?
I love Wayne Krantz. He's great. And I love, you know who I really love? You're going to crack up, or maybe not. You know, I grew up listening to Black Sabbath.
And, oh, yeah.
This band, Fu Manchu.
I love them. Yeah, I know Fu Manchu. They're so awesome. Great. Orange Goblin, Fu Manchu, Monster Magnet, all those guys. I love all that shit.
I just bought their recent record, it's really good. I think Alex Lifeson guest on one of the tunes, and it's just great riffs and great production, I really dig that kind of riff-driven rock.
Yeah.
That's what really kind of drew me to playing guitar in the first place. So I was thinking about writing some more riff-oriented stuff for the future with either Van Davis or with whatever, just writing.
That's funny. It's funny. My older son, he's 28. He likes them. Him and I are musically very compatible, so we always like turn on the same stuff or see the same shows, you know.
Oh,
and
it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Stuff is cool.
Yeah, I love that band.
Very retro.
What are you working on now that you're excited about outside of the show Book of Mormon?
Well, most recently I've been working on sorry, my cat.
No. Jake's cat is literally eyeball to eyeball on
very
the,
jealous
the FaceTime.
And wants to be part of the interview. I don't blame him. He's very cute, but he says the same thing over and over again. So okay, so things I'm in, I've teamed up with my friend Jimmy Soma at Somatone in Austin, Texas. I've worked with him for a very long time. He's an extremely talented, genius amp builder and guitar builder. Mostly he builds amplifiers. Jason Isbell uses his stuff, and he's the best amps in the business. I have a Somatone amp at Book of Mormon. It's called the Slick 18, which is built for Earl Slick. But he builds guitars too, and we teamed up to build the Jake's signature guitar, which I'm really excited about. There's two models, a vintage and modern model. They both have this beautiful roasted maple neck, and they're both, you know, Strat style guitars. One is it's got Lawler pickups, two singles, and a humbucker in the back, and the other one has three DiMarzio noiseless pickups, which are also great. And it's a fabulous guitar, and I'm really happy with it. And very soon, I'll have a video and show you where you can order it. And the coolest thing about it is that they're all made by hand. It's not like I have like a factory making them for me. Jimmy makes each instrument by hand. He puts them all together. Absolutely top quality parts, and everything is it's just an amazing playing and sounding instrument. And it's absolutely my favorite guitar. I have about six instruments Jimmy built for me. One of which was the one that Eddie Van Halen signed. It was I had a Tele Thin Line. In maples, a nice light color, so the sharp. And he wrote that, and I had it sealed. And eventually, I'll have it hanging. I got to get one of those big cases for it. But no, Jimmy builds really great stuff. What I wanted, my goal with the guitar was to build something that would be a really amazing instrument that, you know, you just be turned on to play every time you play it. And it just feels great. And has a resonance to it. When even you play it acoustically, you can just hear it. It just has a certain thing to it that is really, really wonderful. And, it's always fun to play, and I love it. I have one at the show, and I have one here, and I might have a few more just to have around. So I have them to play, because they're really, really fun. Yeah. I'm really excited about that.
That's very cool.
Go to jakeezra.com and there'll be more information on that very, very soon.
Jake Ezra. So let me just tell everybody, Jake is, it's Jake, JAKEEZRA.
Right.
.com. And so let me ask this, maple roasted neck, almost everybody I know is making guitars with that now. It seems to be super popular.
Have you tried that? Have you called them?
I have not. I'm going to NAMM this year, so I'm sure there'll be some guitars there, and I'll definitely try them there. But everybody's making them with maple roasted necks.
It's kind of, you know, it's really funny because there's you've seen it a lot more now. This was Jimmy's recommendation. When I was putting on the guitar, he said, "Ever tried a roasted maple?" I said, "No," and he said, "I think you're going to like it." So basically, the neck is I guess cooked longer, so the wood turns darker. It's got a rosewood fingerboard, but the roasted maple just feels so broken in. It just feels wonderful. You as I got older and I play guitar, I realized how much the neck is such an important part of the thing. I mean, obviously everything on the guitar is important, but the neck you make so much contact with. When you have something that feels the roasted maple, once you feel it, you kind of miss it when you have something that doesn't have that. I find, at least, although, you know, it's every guitar feels different and has its unique qualities. I do really like that a lot about the instrument. And when you have something that's fun to play, you want to play more.
Does Jimmy wind his own pickups, or are those?
No.
What pickups are in there? You got an HSS and then an SSS.
Right. So there's Lawler pickups in the modern. I made like a modern version, which has a regular headstock and two Lawler blackface single coils and an Imperial Lawler in the back. And that was the first guitar I built. of the signature models, and I got it, and it was amazing, and I used it for the gigs, and I was very happy, and I said, man, I want to have another one to use at the show. Because at the time, I have a Mexican Strat, which is a great guitar, but I put a DiMarzio injector in the back, and then two frameless in the front on the Mexican Strat, and I love that guitar. It was really fun to play, but the neck, I kind of missed that feel of the roasted, but the neck on the Mexi Strat is fine, but the roasted maple on that modern model is really, so I said, let's maybe just switch out the neck on the Strat. But the other thing about the guitar is it has this really awesome tremolo called the Wilkinson VGBF.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that.
Oh man, it's like a Floyd Rose without having a locking thing on it. It's a wonderful bridge, and they didn't make that for the spacing on a Mexican Strat. So just build me another one, and put a hatchet headstock on it for fun, make it more vintage style. And he put in the DiMarzio. Originally put the DiMarzio and the two Lindy Fralins in the neck and middle, but the Fralins were a little noisy, and I love the DiMarzio, so let's put all DiMarzios in there. So I switched out the two Fralins for, I think I got an Area 58 in the middle and a 61 in the neck. And man, they sound good. They're stratty, but they're quiet, and they're unique too. So it's kind of its own vibe. And man, I love it. It's just a killer guitar, and it gets screaming lead sounds, but still stratty. And it got the whammy and the neck, and it's not too heavy, and it's just a joy to play. And I know it's my guitar, and everyone's going to want to plug their own instruments, but I like, even if it wasn't mine, if I tried, I'd be like, oh man, this is just a wonderful guitar, and I'm happy with how it came out, and hopefully other players will like it too.
Awesome. That Wilkinson, that's from the UK, I think, correct?
Oh yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Also, Jimmy's kind of like my tone guru, so I really kind of trust him for you know, things like that. So he really helped me put everything together, which was really cool. Yeah, very he's cool, great. Man. If you're in Austin, Texas, and you need guitar work, go see Jimmy. You know, he's seen Dave Grissom and a lot of heavy cats he's seen there, and the word's going to Eric Johnson is a hip to him too. So it's he's very, 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 very good, and word is spreading. So I think he's so busy now. He's got to turn down work. He's got so much stuff going on now. So
that's a good problem to have. Hey, so you had mentioned that your dad was a musician. What did he do specifically? You said he was a session guy in the city? Guitarist also?
No, actually, he plays piano and saxophone and flute and clarinet all really well. And he's a great arranger. And yeah, he did a lot of commercials and sessions. He toured with Melissa Manchester. You can see his picture on a couple of her records, which is really cool.
That is cool, yeah.
I was really lucky to. And he would take me on the sessions when I was a kid, first just to watch. And when I was, you know, in high school, I actually played in a couple of sessions, and kind of having those experiences was really, really great. And I'm really lucky that you know, and that was kind of how I got into it. And he took me to a lot of great concerts too. He took me to see Kiss and Van Halen, and really kind of, you know, led me to where I am now. But and he still plays. He teaches. It's funny that my family all teach school. I started teaching, and then I got out, and everyone else got into it. He my dad's a really inspiring guy because he still plays fabulous, and it's, you know, I think making music really keeps you young and keeps you, you know, vibrant. You know, I hope I can still play as good when I'm my dad's age. So
that's good, man. That's very, so you had like, it's a mentor, you know, growing up throughout your whole career. I think that's really a big plus, man. It gives you a lot more confidence and, just on the sense of understanding, I think, of what you're getting into than if you're thrown to the wolves on your own, sort of.
Absolutely. But also, I mean, he also was, I mean, when I said I wanted to be a musician, you know, my parents weren't thrilled because it's a really, really tough business. And it's a really, it's, and I think it's only gotten more competitive and more saturated. And you know, it was, you know, it took me a lot of work and time to figure out what I wanted to do and how I was going to make a living doing this. But like meeting someone like Bob Rose, I was inspired by him too, because here's someone who's played in he played in the original Grease and City of Angels and Victor Victoria. His resume is extremely impressive, and I always really admired him, and I love that he worked with my dad. And Broadway seemed cool to me, and that was kind of how, and it's funny, my dad didn't do any Broadway stuff, but I think now that he sees all the work I've done. I think he wishes he had. Maybe he could still come and sub on a show. Who knows?
You never know.
He
man.
Wants to.
Stranger things have happened.
A lot of work, though. It's being a sub is hard, especially like having a chair for a while and seeing all these guys come in and play for the first time. But I can feel that fear of that first show. It's I know that feeling in the pit of your stomach. It's a familiar thing. So I understand how tough it is. So I always try to, you know, be warm and supportive and let them feel comfortable so they can go in and do their best. So, yeah.
How do you process that when you were on that side, like that scared shitless, you know, deer in headlights thing that you just talked about? How did you, what are things you did to, you know, handle it or something more?
That's a great question. Well, I'll give you an example. For example, Wicked. I think Wicked is probably one of the hardest guitar. There's two guitars. I played for Guitar One, Rick Molina, who's great. And the other guitar player is Greg Scaff, also killer. I mean, that was a super hard score, and you're playing all the time. Also, a longer show and a lot more underscoring, which is kind of music going on when there's kind of scenes happening. It's not actually a song, but it's kind of music going on. It's kind of like a movie score. A lot of Ebo, which is totally bizarre because. You know what an Ebow is, that little device you hold over your string.
It makes it like sustain or something like that. What is it? Is that what it does? Yeah.
It creates a magnetic field around the pickup. So you hold over the pickup, the note just sustains forever. It's kind of like a Moog. So you just hear the attack on the note and you can slide the note around. But you got to use the Ebow, watch the conductor and be sure you're in line. the Ebow is following the vocal line. And it's so. So what I did to learn that, at the time I had a car in the city and I had a recording of the pit recording. What I did was I listened to it constantly. I listened to it over and over and over again. Not just the guitar part, but all the other cues, oboe cues or vocal cues. I think all those things I was listening for, so I knew when I was going to come in and when things were going to happen. And when you listen to it and you start to feel sick, you're ready. I hear pop in there, I get a little queasy. Oh, yeah, I'm ready to do this. That's sort of the thing where, you know, but like I said before, I think it's that degree of comfort. And, you know, also when you come into the pit, I would spend time in the pit and sit down and look at the pedals and take a picture of it. And then I'd go home and recreate the pedal board exactly how it is in this. So, and then I have, one of the things they do now is they usually make a recording of the conductor conducting so you can watch how he gives the cues. And I put on the conductor DVD, set up the pedals, and I play through the show. So everything is exactly how it is. And I do that over and over and over again. When I subbed on Latin Piazza, which was one of the coolest experiences I think I've had playing on Broadway, because that was a beautiful score, won a Tony, and Kelly O'Hara was brilliant in it, and it was all acoustic instruments, no synths, all strings and real harp, and so beautiful. And I play classical, and it had this amazing. Adam Gettle was the composer, and it was just. Really amazing music. But one of my doubles is so funny, was a suspended cymbal, because I guess the percussionist had a bunch of stuff he was doing, and he couldn't play certain cues. I mean, he only has two hands, so I had certain these like swells. And I mean my brother's a drummer, I'm not a drummer, but you know, I bought a pair of mallets, and it was hard because you had to get the right crest and the right decline just at the right time. And so my first show in that, I was super nervous, but the conductor Ted Sperling was so cool, and he came up to me and he said, you know, Jake, have fun. He pointed the cymbal, goes, hit that hard. And I said, all right. And then I felt good, and it was a good show, and I got to play that. I got to play that for a long time, once a week, because the chair player, Andy Schwartz, no relation, great player, had a teaching job. He taught once a week, so I got to play once a week, and it was awesome. That's the other thing, too. When you sub, depending on how often the guy takes off, you might play it more often or less often, and that's a challenge too, to keep it in your, you know, in your arsenal, so you can jump and do it whenever they get called. But you don't know when you're going to get called. You might not get called for a couple of months. You might be called tomorrow. So, you know, you never know.
It sounds like all this is it really keeps you sharp and on top of your game, though, because you got so many different things that you got to be on, you know, aware of.
I think I got. Playing Broadway made me a much better player, and also more aware of all the other details, and especially with watching the conductor. I'll be honest, when I first started subbing, I was not great at following the conductor. I was okay, but I didn't really, I more just played the part and wanted to play it right. And, you know, someone said to me, you really got to watch the conductor. It's like, they said, no, we like having you here. We want you to stay here. You know, if you don't focus on that as much, you're not going to get called as much. So that was skills I really made a point to work on. And I think that since then, it's I'm really much more focused and aware of things going on around me outside of the playing, and that's really important. I think it kind of helps you to really understand what makes it work, and it's cool.
Yeah, but I want to point out to the listeners about the preparation that's involved in this. I mean, you went home, you put the conductor's DVD on, you got the pedal board right in front of you. That's a lot of preparation, and you know, it's kind of like anal, but I think it's like pretty appropriate. You gotta, you know, I mean, that's what you got to do to make sure you don't make any mistakes, you know? And I think that kind of level of commitment is why you've been in this chair so long and why you get called for all these sub spots and why you keep getting called for the subs. You know, I mean, it's, you know, people, I think I'm a guy coming out of the business world. And I always see the similarities between this, you know, you get what you deserve, you know, and preparation and work ethic, 99% of the time is the big contributing factor as to why.
Absolutely. And your job as a sub is to come in and play as if they don't know the guy is out.
Yeah.
Be seamless. I mean, to a degree. You're not going to sound just like the guy. You know, the tone's in here. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to borrow his hands or her hands.
Sure.
But you want to really, really get all the idiosyncrasies going on with the player so it feels the same. And then the conductor's happy. The you know, the actors are happy. Everything feels good. When you have someone who, you know, they're listening too. I would remember, you want to make it seem like they don't even notice you're there. You want to be under the radar.
Yeah.
And there's certain things, you know. But yeah, I mean, like, even like, I remember when I was something on Wicked, there was this really challenging mandolin part in off time and just totally like wacko. I remember practicing over and over and over and over, and I was constantly playing that. And then I did the show, and it was over. It was like boom, boom. And I'm like, God, I spent all that time, and it just flew by. And it was fine, but it was just like, you know, why did I stress so much about this stuff? And that's when I realized it's not about the individual parts. It's the arc I said over. But that really is the way. You know, you want to kind of get the overall flow of the show.
So along those same lines, if you had to give, you know, your younger self advice, what would you have told yourself?
Be open-minded. Listen to not just guitar music, but everything else, other instruments, you know, piano, saxophone, harpsichord, you know, just, you know, take everything in you know, also, you know, if people ask you if you can do certain things musically, say yes. Can you do this? Yes. The banjo? Yes. Can you, you know, don't be frightened. I mean, don't get over your head, but don't, you know, it's, if you say yes and you do more things, then people are more willing to call you to do other things. And don't be afraid and play with confidence. That's the biggest part. Like when I was playing the Mama's Papa show, like, you know, the harmonica, John said, take the harmonica in your hand, take a deep breath, and you play and you just put it out there. And it's just like, it's amazing how when you have that kind of confidence, people say, oh, wow, this guy really knows what he's doing. Even if I only can play two songs or a couple of notes, you know?
Yeah, well, nobody else knows that.
Like, play the hell out of those notes, man. You just give it all you got. And it's amazing how much, you know, it shows that you feel good and it's a good thing. But yeah, that took time to learn. And yeah, I think after subbing for a while, I eventually got the hang of it. But it took some time. But I it's fun. And sometimes I miss some of that. It was fun to kind of have that variety of playing different shows every night and not knowing whether the phone's going to ring, and having dinner with my wife, phone rings. Can you play it? I'm stuck in the tunnel. Okay, we gotta go. Don't want a black shirt. I keep a black shirt in my bag so I could change. But Book of Mormon is the most fun I've had on Broadway. So it's a pretty sweet gig. So if I'm gonna play one show all the time, I'm glad it's Book of Mormon because it's a real treat.
Very cool. Any players who have influenced your playing that people would be surprised to hear?
Oh, that's a good question. Wow. Surprised? I don't know. I mean,
well, I ask that because everybody, if I say who your influence is, pretty much everybody has had the same, you know, influences, some version of, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Page, you know, those guys, Ritchie Blackmore, you know, those guys. So I always ask, you know, is there anybody that might be surprised, because they'd be like, oh, that's interesting, you know?
Let me think. I love Chet Atkins and Jerry Reed. Fabulous. Very hard to play that stuff.
Impossible.
I can kind of, you know, plunk my way through the claw, but to really do it right, you have to use a thumb pick. And that's always weird for me. I struggled with that when I played banjo. The thumb pick always felt so weird to me, and the finger picks. And same thing with like playing lap steel. It's a very bizarre sort of feeling. I love, a lot of country guys. Vince Gill's killer, and I'm a big Ricky Skaggs fan, and I love his bluegrass. I mean, I'm a big bluegrass fan. Brian Sutton, love him.
I got him coming on this show in a couple of weeks. Yeah, he's an amazing player.
Bad cat, and I love that he's playing bluegrass, but he's got that kind of fiery Eddie Van. He's the Eddie Van Halen. You know? He has that kind of, that sense of humor and chops, and I really dig that. And there's a big bluegrass thing in New York too at Rockwood Music Hall. It's great, you know. It's Brian has played there with Michael Davies, there's a scene, you know. And I played in a honky tonk band a long time ago, and I remember there was a jam session, a bluegrass jam session, and people just come and just play tunes. It was so cool. There's so many fiddle tunes, and it was so much fun learning those tunes and everything. And that stuff is a lot of fun. And at the show too, I have a G&L telly with a B bender. I didn't use it at the time, but recently I started using it. It's really, really fun. And I'm not trying to make this show sound too country sounding, but I can sneak it in here and there, and it's a really, really fun device. And I like guys that are really good at that stuff. And I mean, Brad Paisley has his G bender, which is cool too, because the B bender is pretty much the standard for all Nashville guys. Oh, and Brent Mason too. I love Brent Mason too.
Oh yeah, he's like some pickers. Oh. You ever heard of a guy named Red Volkart?
Oh yeah, that guy is just
yeah. He's out in Austin with all those other guys.
He's a lot of the interesting men. He's got such a. And also, I like him too because he also has come from the Western Swing School. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. Oh, and the thing I really enjoy also in Speedy West and Jimmy Bryant. Have you heard about their stuff?
I have not.
It's a duo, pedal style, steel guitar and regular guitar. Jimmy Bryant, killer kind of Western Swing style player. It's kind of like country, but it's jazz. There's a whole slew of recordings there that you can find. Stratospheric Boogie is one of the things. If you don't know it, check it out. It's Shred Before Shred Was Shred. And he's got wonderful jazzy, you know, inflection in the line. I think he was very influenced by Charlie Christian. And it's very, very cool. And that stuff just knocked me out when I heard it. And I just got so into it. I went and got everything they ever made. I bought a rare German box set, the company called it the Bear Family. Called Flaming Guitars. That's all the stuff that Jimmy and Speedy played on together and separately. And all that playing on Spike Jones records and really old, but with killer playing and all this like wacky, like lap steel stuff or steel guitar stuff. Really, really hip. If you don't know it, check it out. It's really, really cool stuff.
I'll tell you what's really interesting too. When there's very niched fans, like when I interview a pedal steel guitar player, those fans are rabid. They gobble this stuff up. They're very niche fans, like, you know, specific forums dedicated to that niche and everything. It's very, very intense.
I love steel guitar too. I love Paul Franklin and who else. I love that sound. I think one day I'm gonna buy a pedal steel and really try it, because I've been playing some slide and I love Sonny Landreth too. I have a guitar set up in open E with the thick string and high action, and then it's really fun to play and get that really kind of big, that big sound, and learning how to control it. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this. I don't know if this is even a legit question, but is there like a typical Broadway sound that, you know, like, is it possible to have one guitar that you'd have that would satisfy your needs for playing on Broadway? Or do you really need, like, you know, like most people, like a session guys, you know, you need a Les Paul, you need a Tele, you need a Strat.
That's a great question. I think it would be hard for me to you know, just say it's got to be this sort of thing. But yeah, there is a certain sound I think that people want in the pit. And there's I mean, in the shows I've played or the chairs I've had, I usually use a Strat or a Tele. I would say there's one specific thing that people want. But generally, I mean, you know, especially shows nowadays call for a much more kind of modern approach to playing. And you know, they want to have the sounds that they're hearing, you know, on the radio and things like that, or what people are hearing. It's very much in that very – they want the guitar to be consistent and to sit in a certain place. And, you know, when you want to scream, it'll scream. And otherwise, you want to keep it, you know – in line with the rest of, because, you know, you're supporting the show as a, you know, guitarist and a musician in the pit. You know, it's not about you. It's about the show. And that's something you have to really, you know, it's like some players might want to show off and show all their tricks or whatever, but you really can't do that. Except in the end, on the, if you get a chance, if you, you know, not every show has it, but occasionally you might get a chance to have a little guitar solo at the end, and you do, then you can go. And, you know, someone said, you know, doing the show is your job. The solo at the end, that's who you are.
Right, right.
You know, your job is to play the music. But yeah, I'd say Tele or Strat, and usually a nylon and an acoustic, and sometimes, you know, a mandolin. Banjo seems to always sneak its way into Broadway. I got lucky. I got to Mormon doesn't have any banjo in it, but I've played plenty of banjo in shows. I played a show called Saved, which is based on a movie with Macaulay Culkin. It came out a long time ago, the mid-teen music, which is a good show. And that's a banjo in it. And I borrowed Bob Rose's banjo. And he basically had a five-string banjo. And it's basically tuned to open G. So it was D, G, B, D. And I tuned a high D up to an E. So it's like the top four strings of a guitar. So I just played, like, you know, like playing the chords, lower half of the chords.
Sure.
And it sounds banjo-y. But no, I'm not. I'm not really great at playing tenor banjo in a real kind of ragtime style and that kind of sound. But I can fake my way through it. But if I really wanted to, I'd have to really get into it and focus on it and really, because guys would specialize in that sort of thing. So.
But that doesn't come up too often either. So it's not like,
not as much. But you know, a lot of these revivals come out and they want banjo. I had to play tenor banjo on Spamalot. I had to really practice that. That was a challenge. I didn't really understand, but it's actually similar to mandolin, where the strings are tuned in fifths, just learning those shapes and everything. But it's kind of cool though, because that's when you have that tuning in fifths, you can make much wider interval jumps easier than say on a guitar, which is tuned mostly in fourths. Hmm. So it's a lot of fun, but it's a different kind of animal, and you got to spend some time with it, get comfortable with it. But yeah, I especially think that Broadway these days is really it's really cool how it's evolved and how you know the parts are much more interesting and really really challenging and fun, and especially like the first time I sat in the pit of Wicked, I was totally blown away. I bought this cast album because I was so impressed with all the orchestrations, and it was just so brilliant and unique, and it wasn't what I was expecting. And the guitar parts, but the Ebow parts, were so cool because it gave such an interesting thing to it that made it so unique, and you hear, oh yeah, that sounds like Wicked. Now I hear Ebow, I think Wicked.
Hey, if I asked you to pick your top three Desert Island Discs in no particular order, just for today, knowing they could change tomorrow, what would be your knee-jerk reaction?
And I saw that question, I was thinking about it, and it's so hard.
I know.
I'm super picky, and I get super sick of stuff really easily, but I was thinking about it, and believe it or not, I would choose, first choice would be, I guess, Physical Graffiti from Led Zeppelin.
Oh, great album.
It's a really good record, only because it's really hard for me to choose three, and I probably can give you a lot of alternates, but I chose that mostly personally because I remember when I bought it on cassette, and I had I'm aging myself now. I had a Walkman with auto reverse. Sizzle Graffiti is a double record. And
yeah.
I had the whole thing on one cassette. So I'm listening to the whole thing on one side, and I'd fall asleep with the headphones on going back and forth and back and forth. Especially the stuff in the second side, like In the Light. And,
great.
It's really, really, really well done. They were kind of, I feel like they really kind of found a great groove. It's a really varied, interesting record. I like that a lot. Probably Bird and the Bee. Bird and the Bee make me really happy that the music always, just very pleasing. And it really, really, I always enjoy listening to them, and I love her voice a lot. And the third record, gosh, I don't know. I mean, it's a really tough question, dude. Can I get back to you on that? Before the interview is over, I'll think of the third record. I want to think a little. I thought about this, and I really got stuck because there's so many things I like, but a lot of things I'm really sick of too. I realize too. Like I'm generally I love Led Zeppelin, but sometimes I'm a little sick of hearing, because we hear the songs over and over and over again in the radio and on TV and all over the place. And it's just it's a little oversaturated for me. That's why I chose Physical Graffiti, because you don't hear as much of those tunes.
Yeah. You know that album cover with the building on it?
Yeah.
It's downtown. It's in Bleecker Street.
My buddy lived in that building.
Did he really? That's wild.
Not there anymore. I thought the cover was cool too. Yeah, that's the other thing. I thought the cover was cool. I guess, you know what? Okay, 1984 from Van Halen. I guess I'll pick
that. Good album.
But I probably get sick of that too after hearing it for a while. But again, the tunes I like from that are the ones, you know, like I like I'll Wait. It's a great tune. Drop Dead Legs, Killer.
So you like the deep cuts?
I do. Yeah, there's something about them that are so cool. I wanted to, you know, when I met Eddie after the show, I was too scared. I was freaked out meeting him, because it was too much for me. It was like meeting Mozart. I said a few things to him. He didn't say much
to
me.
That's great.
I said, would you mind signing my guitar? And he immediately grabbed it and wrote it. And I was like, oh my God. And then I looked at it and I cried. I couldn't prep, but I wanted to ask him, like, on the end of Women and Children First, In a Simple Rhyme, which is the last tune, great tune, almost kind of like Rush sounding. It's kind of progressive sounding.
It's a good song.
At the end, there's a little groove they play, and then it ends. And it was another song that never got produced, and I wanted to ask him what that was, but I didn't. I missed my opportunity. Little lesson, always when you meet someone, remember, you know, try to think of the things you want to ask them when you can, because you may not have that opportunity again. So, yeah. But so that was really cool. That was a real thrill. Him and Alex and Wolfgang came too. Wolfgang was really cool too. And I just seen them. They just played at Madison Square Garden. This was, I guess, 2012 when they reunited. And man, they were great. Rocking. Still, Eddie is just the best. Just a beast. And no one like him. No one has that touch and that feel, it's really great to see him. So yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, a lot of people will agree with you on that. Hey, a couple of New York City questions. Toughest thing about living in the city.
Toughest thing?
Yeah.
Expensive. And finding a good apartment too. I mean, it's when I first moved in with Janine, she was still in college. We lived in an apartment. A really awesome brownstone on 107th Street, but it was small and it was very expensive. And it's, you know, it's a Paul Stanley joke, and you walk through the front door and fall out the window. You know, things got better as I got more work and things like that. But yeah, it's expensive and it's crowded and it's hot and subways can be a pain. It can really try your patience living in a city sometimes. Hmm. But there's no place like it. It's a wonderful, what an amazing vibe.
The vibe, the energy, man. It's like,
and it's a hub. I mean, it's like, if you live in the city, people will make it here at one point or another. I feel like it's a place where you're going to find, it's just a place where, you know, if you've got friends or relatives that live far away, you know, they'll eventually make their way to the city once in a while. And I like that. And my cousin just got in touch with me, and his daughter is turning 14. He's a big Broadway fan, and they wanted to get Mormon tickets. So, and I haven't seen them in years, so I'm excited. I got them tickets, and they're going to come and see the show. And it's really exciting. I get them a backstage tour afterwards. So, yeah. But, yeah, New York can be – it's noisy, And it can really be trying on your patience. I love it. I love it here. I couldn't do this anyplace else. So, yeah.
What's your favorite quiet spot?
My apartment. It's very quiet here. Nice. We're away from the street, so it's not. It was funny. I was rehearsing yesterday with my guitar partner for our gig tonight, and he's got a great apartment on Columbus in the 70s. And a great view. We have no view here, so only bummer, but it is quiet. But his place, we're playing nice, beautiful, quiet, you know, beautiful cavatina, beautiful, beautiful piece. All of a sudden, you hear like a. What are you doing on? It's like, you know, oh yeah, we're in the city, you know, so it's like. That's just the way it is.
But, yeah.
I like it here. And sometimes I have a rehearsal space in Midtown where I rehearse with my band. Some other bands playing there too. Sometimes, you know, I'll stop by there and it's quiet. I'll just kind of sit there and just kind of close my eyes and just listen to music and just kind of zone out for a little bit. It's nice to have a little oasis. As long as there aren't other bands are playing, it's very, very noisy.
Sure.
It's nice to go there and just kind of just calm my head, because I feel like in New York there's so many things trying to get your attention. And
yeah, man, there really is.
And if you can give your brain a chance to rest, I've been getting into, I have to do it more, but I'm getting into doing a bit of meditating, just doing like Headspace app on my phone. I really like it. I think it's a really important thing to do, especially living here, because you're just going and going and going. You don't realize how much of a toll it's taking on you. And if you give your mind a rest and just kind of let yourself go, it's really healthy and good for you. And so you don't go crazy.
No, it totally is. When we had such great weather last week when we were there, man, I just
sit. Last week was nice, right?
Oh my God. We sat. We were so lucky. And we just sat in Washington Square. That's my favorite place, is Washington Square Park. And it was just so beautiful. Just sitting there, like, there's thousands of people there, but it was very mellow, just like relaxed, you know. And I did that as a kid all the time. I used to go down there just to hang out. So it was.
And you grew up in the Bronx, you said?
Yeah, yeah.
Super cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I really like Washington Square Park. Of course, when I went, I was a kid, you used to be able to buy loose joints and all that stuff.
Well, that was a much more different. Did Dave Lee Roth get busted there, right?
What's that?
Dave Lee Roth get busted for trying to buy.
Probably, I don't know, but it was different. You know, you'd have guys competing, walking around loose joints, you know,
wow,
there's,
really?
Oh, it was like, you know, yeah. And then you'd call somebody over and then the three other guys would come over and go, whoa, you know, hey, you know, they'd all be, it was just like you had to see it to experience it.
Wow.
There's a funny thing on, you know, Simon and Garfunkel did a concert in Central Park, and there's a dub, and on there, Paul Simon says, I want to thank somebody that really isn't recognized very much. You know, I want to thank the mayor, boo, the parks department, boo, the police, boo, and a little known group that isn't recognized enough, the guy selling loose joints, and everybody's like, yay. Yeah, it's quite funny, but that was what it was like back
That's
then
really
in,
funny.
In the parks and everything. It was kind of weird. It was a little bizarre, you know.
A different time. I mean, I remember like my dad taking me to the city back, you know, back in the day. It was funky. Like,
yeah.
42nd, it was a really, really, yeah, it's a different. It's a different
oh, it's creepy, man. I remember I was a messenger during the summertime.
Oh, wow.
When so a messenger is, for the listeners, this is, you know, before they had fax machines and FedEx and all that shit. You would pick up a package at one place and literally deliver it to another place. Often it was blueprints, but it could be anything, sheet of paper, you know. But there was no FedEx. There was no faxes. So that's how businesses communicated with each other. I remember I was 14 when I did this. I was walking down 42nd Street one day, and I saw this woman get her chain snatched, like literally right in front of me. I was 14. It's a little kid, kind of, you know, and I was like, whoa, that's kind of,
whoa.
Yeah, that was just
that
like,
shock.
Yeah, I was like, wow, look at that. But, you know, and I hate to say this, I, you know, I learned from it. I like, okay, I got to be aware. I got to, you know, but yeah, it was a different world. New York's so much cleaner now, you know, or safer.
Yeah.
Hey, what have you learned about yourself throughout this musical journey you've been on?
That's a good question too. That it's not about you, not just about you. It's about everything around you and how what makes music so wonderful and is to be able to you know, play and communicate with other people and find a groove and make it work. I used to be very focused on technique and playing and being really, you know, as proficient as possible. But, you know, I learned the most from playing with other players and other musicians. And like, for example, like when I was at college, I had a wonderful teacher and I had great classes, but I learned so much from the other students too. William Patterson was a really heavy jazz school, actually. Now, I was a classical major, but I loved hanging with the jazz cats because they were really all amazing players, and I learned so much from hanging and playing and I learned how much fun it is to play with other talented players and to, you know, absorb and you know, make conversation. Music is a conversation. It should be comfortable and flowing. And if it's not, then it's not good.
I like that. Music is a conversation. It's not Thanks. About you. That's good stuff, man. Best childhood memory?
Disney World. My dad, I think, did a gig and he got some vouchers to stay at a timeshare and went to Disney World. And I think I was maybe, you know, 13 or 14, and it was so much fun, and I loved it. Space Mountain, and I've gone over and over again. Definitely Disney World, and seeing Van Halen when I was 9, the 1984 tour. Again, my dad, God bless him, he you know, he enjoyed it too, actually. I think that was my first concert. He took me to see Kiss, actually, when I was 8 at Radio City Music Hall, believe it or not.
Wow, that's a nice show.
It was good, but it was very loud, and I ended up leaving early. It was a little bit much for me, and I was so young, too. But Van Halen, just, it was different. I don't know what it was, but just something about it just really, really spoke to me, and Eddie was just on fire. He, like, had the thing where he put the guitar up on a tray, sort of playing it like a piano and doing all the shtick, and it was awesome. It was just really, really... I think that's when I realized I wanted to play guitar and I wanted to be a musician. That really kind of solidified it and that whole thing. In some way, shape, or form. I think maybe when I was younger, I wanted to be like him, like be in a band and play and tour and things like that. But as I got older, and especially with my dad, I just being able to make a living playing music is such a wonderful thing. And you know, Broadway has been such a great, you know, I'm so grateful that I've been able to do this work. And I think what attracted me to it was, besides the fact that it was good work and you know, it can be consistent, but it attracted such a high level of musicians. I mean, at Lion King, I was playing with guys like Ted Baker and Tommy Igo and Tom Barney from Steely Dan's band, and Wilbur Bascom, we played with Jeff Beck. I mean, like, just heavy, heavy, heavy cats. You know, at Book of Mormon now, our drummer, Sean McDaniel, who's a wonderful, amazing drummer, best in the city, he left Mormon to do the show Frozen. So his replacement is a guy named Cliff Almond. I don't know if you recognize that
name.
Cliff is a phenomenal, phenomenal drummer. Played with Michelle Camilo, plays with Wayne Krantz. I was a fan of Cliff's when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
He's a disciple of Dave Buckle, and he's just a powerhouse. And to have someone of that level playing in our show kind of shows you just what, you know, the level of talent and musicianship you see in the city in these kind of shows. So it's you got to bring it in these gigs. You can't phone it in. You have to really bring your best, and it's great when you have a drummer like that. It really makes you really work harder and do your best and really reach for, you know, reach for it. Do as best as you can. Even if you don't even don't make it, try. You know,
yeah.
I like having that sort of, you know, it's a great thing. We all get challenged, and it ends up having a really great show and a great playing band. Yeah.
Do you think music has brought you and your dad, like, has been a good bond between you guys, now that you're a professional musician than he is?
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard. We definitely, there were some times it was challenging because, you know, I wanted to, it's hard to, you know, you have kids, if they want to learn things from you, like music, that can be a challenging thing. I think it was hard for him to teach me, but what he taught me beyond was really, really important and special. I think it's the reason why I've had a lot of success, is that, you know, a lot of, like, for example, like my dad, has done this for a long time. There's a lot of people I know who know my dad. And whenever I mention my dad, they always say great things about him. And it made me realize that you really have to be a good person, a cool person. And you have to really that's the real secret to succeeding in this business, because, you know, pits are small and you're close with other people, and you have to be cool. Someone can come in and be a total virtuoso, you know, just amazing technique. But if they're, you know, have a bad attitude, or they're kind of, you know, can be a little difficult to be around, you know, they're not going to get called as much. They'll call someone who maybe not as much a virtuoso, but does a good job, but is cool and gets along. They're going to get called more. And it's you got to be cool. That's the, you know, and be nice and be gracious and grateful for the work. Oh God, another gig. Oh God, another show. You know, it's like, it's a job. You're being hired to play, you know, take pride in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the tough thing you mentioned, I know with me, with my kids, they don't want to hear what you have to say until a certain age is what it is.
Because you're the dad.
Yeah.
Immediately, it doesn't matter what you say. It's right. The fact that you're the dad, it's of course. That's, I totally get that.
Yeah, because now, like, my son, like, I had all the kids, everybody were here yesterday for dinner, and our granddaughter was here, and my son was telling me some stuff. He's 28 now, and he says, well, remember when you did this, that really helped me out a lot. He wouldn't have said that 5 years ago.
Oh.
You know, so, and, you know, I'm happy that I was able to give that to him, you know, so, but I think some of it is age, and that's, it makes it tough as a father, because you're like, you want to hear some of that and you don't get it. And it's like, shit, man. But then you just got to be patient. You don't know that, though.
Not take my advice. Yeah, I know. It's like, but yeah. It's only because, you know, kids growing up, and, you know, you kind of wish to kind of try to getting your footing and trying to understand what you're doing, what you're all about. You're still developing. And you're much longer process than you think. You know, it's like, I always think it's funny when you graduate high school and they go to college, like, they have to decide what you're going to do. That's so hard.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's a big, you know, some people I know went to college and still doing what they do. A lot of people made changes, did other things, or went completely different directions, or, like, I went to music school, but ended up doing something completely different.
Sure.
It's just, it's really, it's hard. And yeah, you have to kind of just live life and grow and see what happens, and see how you develop and how but yeah, that's a tough thing.
Yeah, it is tough. Tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
Well, I was going to say that I'm a cat guy, but that's already obvious now. I grew up a dog, but I really, really, really dig cats. I'm a sucker, and I'm always looking at cat videos and I really dig cats. I dig animals in general, surprise. I guess that's it for now. I couldn't think of anything else.
Cool, man. Totally cool. You mentioned that you're married. How long have you been married?
It's going to be, 13 years.
Oh, congratulations. That's great, man. Holy shit. Six. That's awesome. Yep. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You got married really young.
It's 30.
I thought you were in your, like, 30s, to be honest. I didn't realize.
No, that 43.
That's cool, man. Well, you look really young. That's good.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
it's been great.
13 years is a long time, especially, you know, in New York, especially in music. That's a big accomplishment.
I think also the fact that we both are artists, but it's different enough that we can kind of go our own way. But we do a lot of work together. Janine and her writing partner, they had a show. I got to play guitar with the band. It was really, really fun. And it was great to be part of that. And she helps me a lot with my music and with the band and with promotions and you know, doing graphics. And she's really good with social media and things like that. And the fact that she's younger really helps too, because it kind of helps me, because I'm a little old school in some ways, and she kind of helps me keep real and keep modern and keep things, you know, the way people look at media and look at things like that and how to promote and things like that. It keeps changing every day, so she's way more on top of it than I am.
You're active for us. I think we're on Facebook together. You're active on Facebook once in a while.
I try. It's a challenge. You don't want to do it too much and be annoying, but if you don't do it enough, you kind of fall off the radar. There's a fine balance.
And you want to be sincere about it too. You don't want to just like overtly be like, oh, I need to post something or I need to say something. So let me, yeah, because then that doesn't work either, you know.
We only post when he has a gig, or only post when he's eating a fancy steak or something.
Yeah.
Like it's I try to think of things that are relevant and you know, and also with the, you know, all the politics stuff going on in the world, I kind of...
Oh, that's too negative, man. No matter what side of the boat you're on, it's just too negative, man, to hear all that shit and deal with it.
But I think that Facebook has been fun. I've connected with some people and it's cool. It's been good for music and for promoting, and I've met some really cool people, and it's been great to a lot of players reach out to me and ask me questions about Mormon and ask for advice. I'm always happy and flattered and always want to help out, because... You know, not that long ago, I was that guy reaching out to players.
Sure.
And I found, especially like in Broadway, everyone is really nice and warm and gracious and wants to help. As long as you come about it in the right way, you know, if you're demanding and like, you know, it's all in the tone and how you reach out to them. You're like, oh, you know, I want a sub for you. Well, that's fine. Like, oh, you know, I'm a young player. I'd love to meet you and ask your advice. Absolutely. You know, we'll come get coffee. You can come sit in the pit with me and you can watch a show and we can talk. And I'm happy to offer any advice I can.
That's really nice of you.
Players out, because it's important. Because, you know, I got a lot out of that when I was a younger guy starting out in this business. And a lot of people really helped me along the way. And I'm grateful for that, because I probably wouldn't be doing this otherwise if I didn't have the help.
Very cool.
Players, and starting with my dad too, and Bob Rose too. So, yep.
Hey, I'm gonna ask you three more questions.
Yeah, cool.
Hobbies or interests outside of music, if you have any, and cats, besides cats.
Cats. I love spending time with my wife and going and hear music, and I love traveling. We're gonna take a cruise, which will be a lot of fun. We're gonna go to Canada. I've never been to Canada. The cruise to Canada will be interesting.
That's cool.
We've been to some Caribbean locations, but. I'm really excited to explore Canada, and I enjoy reading and I love movies and TV, and Netflix is a lot of fun, and what else? Cooking here and there. I'm not great, but I get a kick out of it. We do plated and you know, those home delivery food things.
Yeah.
And Janine takes the reins. I'm a little squeamish cutting stuff because I'm nervous about my hands, but I love prepping and being the sous chef and things like that. That's a lot of fun. And just enjoying life.
Cool. Yeah, cooking's a good thing. Like for years, my wife and I would always, we don't even like it. I mean, it's okay, but we'd always just like once in a while on a Friday night, even when we had the kids, when my kids were younger, we'd just make spaghetti sauce and open up and have a couple of drinks. It'd just be something fun to do.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to do together with somebody.
It's a good thing. Yeah, when you're with your wife or partner, it's a nice.
Yeah, thing to relaxing. Together. It's doing something together, and you get to go see the end, and you get to eat it and enjoy it. So it's kind of cool.
Great.
Ever had a specific experience, Jake, that changed your life or altered the way you think about things?
That's a good question. You know, I did have something experience that I grew from this experience. When I graduated college, I was studying with a guitar player, Glenn Alexander, who's a fabulous player. He plays with Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, and he subbed on Conan for Jimmy Vivino. He's a killer player and a wonderful teacher. And actually, he was my neighbor when I was growing up, so I asked to study with someone like him was great. He was from Kansas, so he was big into, he kept me to Holdsworth and Steve Morse and Matheny. Anyway, so Glenn recommended me to Lenny Pickett, who was looking for a new guitar player for Saturday Night Live. And this is, I guess, 98, maybe. So I got to audition for Saturday Night Live, which was really fun. And I had a bunch of guitar players coming in. It was a big cattle call, a bunch of players, and I'd play with the band, and I made the final five, which is really exciting, but
wow.
I didn't get the gig, obviously. And that was a real learning experience for me, because I realized, and especially it's a television show, and it's a, you know, you have to look the part. And I think at the time I was a little heavier, my hair was a little weird, and I didn't put as much thought, and I wore a nice outfit, but I didn't really put as much thought into my image. And I realized how that is a part. It's not everything. You have to play, you have to be good, and you have to be musical, but image is a part of the part you get. I realized your presentation, it's all the factors that are going to affect the outcome of these sort of situations. But it was a lot of fun. The plan was killer, and I run to Lenny once in a while. When I auditioned, I hung out with him, and it was so much fun chatting with him. I'm a big Tower of Power fan. I was geeking about Back to Oakland and What Is Hip and all that. It was really fun. We had a fun hang, and we connected. And then every once in a while, I run into him in the city. So that was a cool experience and fun to play with those guys. And I was bummed when it didn't happen, but you know, I no regrets, because this worked out with the Broadway thing with Book of Mormon. It's really been a great thing, and it's if it didn't work out that way, I probably would have been more upset. Because I mean, this is a cool thing. It's a really cool gig, and it's a good fit for me.
Was that after G.E. Smith?
Yes.
Who wound up getting that?
Lukasz Gottwald.
Oh, right.
And then he left, and there's a new guy,
Jared Scharf. I interviewed him about 3 months
ago. He's great.
Yeah, really good player. Yeah,
I've met him a few times. Really, really great cat. Great player. It's awesome. Yeah.
And last question, man. What has been the biggest change in your personality, Jake, over the last 10 years? And how much of this change has been deliberate and intentional on your part, and how much has just been a part of aging?
I think maybe just really being grateful and humble and life is short, and you know, if you're going to do something in the arts and in the creative business, you need to always be humble. I think when you lose sight of that, you start to lose, you know, the reason why I got into playing the music in the first place. Like, what is it that drew me to the guitar? I wanted to, you know, have something to express myself and to have something that I could, I was always kind of a quiet kid. I was kind of a geeky kid. I was kind of chubby. And music was really something that gave me an outlet and gave me something where I could be myself. And especially guitar was so much fun. You know, because you can really make your own, you know, sound and get your own fingerprint with, you know, pedals and guitars and all that stuff. But as I got older, I think it's just being grateful and remembering what it is that drew you to make music in the first place. I think sometimes when you play music for a living, sometimes people lose that feeling of what it was that attracted them to playing in the first place. You could always, oh, I gotta get the next, I gotta make money, I gotta make rent, I gotta pay the mortgage and whatnot. And sometimes that could be a bummer, and it can kind of take away that love. And that's no fun. I don't think. I think you need to always remember that joy and that feeling you get when you first heard something, when you first played that thing correctly. When I first played Stairway to Heaven, I was like, oh my God, what's Stairway to Heaven? You know, it's like that. Those never forget that. Never forget where you came from, and never forget how much you've grown. And I think definitely it's from getting older and from, you know, working and playing and doing a bunch of different gigs. But I've been really, really grateful and fortunate to have all the things that have happened in my career so far. So, yeah.
Awesome. Listen, man, I can't thank you enough. Let me tell people where to find you and some cool stuff you have going on. Thank you. I do appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure, Craig. It's super cool, man.
So it's Jake Ezra Schwartz. You can find Jake online at Jake Ezra, JAKEEZRA, so two E's. He's got a signature guitar coming out really soon, and that's with Somatone, with Jimmy Soma out of Austin, I believe. Yep. Two guitars, a vintage and a modern. He also has, I asked him, Jake takes on some limited students. So if you're interested in having a lesson with Jake, check him out online or just contact him through his contact form on his website. And also his band Van Davis has an album out called Come With Me. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. We made that album about 3 years ago. An awesome studio in Long Island City called Spin Studios. That's what I'm doing my session tomorrow, actually, for a lovely studio. I see Alex records there too. Yeah, it came out great. We did an Indiegogo fundraiser for the record, and it was a really wonderful. People were really generous, and the record came out great. I'm very happy with it. We have a great singer, Abba Nakumsen, who sings with us, who was a really wonderful, talented singer. She was on Broadway too. She was in the show Fela on Broadway, and she sings, does a bunch of different gigs, including a thing called the Resistance Revival Choir. And they got to perform at the Grammy. She sang with Kesha, which is very really cool. And yeah, she's a great singer and a good poet too, and she writes great lyrics. And John Price on bass and Patrick Carmichael, we've been a trio for a long time, instrumental, and I added Abana as a singer to kind of make it more of a vocal funk sort of thing. And we've been a band for a long time. I mean, about 16 years we've been together. Well, so,
and it's funk rock, funk and rock?
Yeah.
And is that online? People can listen to it and find it online?
Oh, yeah. Go to bandavis.com and you can hear some stuff. We have some YouTube clips, and I've got a bunch of new music that's going to be coming out shortly. Definitely stay tuned, and we'll have some new things coming up. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. And check out Jake if you're in the city at Book of Mormon. Great show, and he's a super talented player. Man, thank you. I really appreciate everything. And
Craig, this was so much fun, man. Cool. Great questions, too. Really insightful and smart and really, really cool.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I feel the same way. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Thanks so much to Jake Ezra Schwartz for spending time with us. Go check Jake out online at jakeezra.com and support him at Book of Mormon. We appreciate his time. And go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our list and get notified of future episodes, along with some early product announcements and discounts. And this is important. Remember, happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. Till next time, I'm out, everybody. Peace and love. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music. Thank you.